Hello and welcome to the ProPublica podcast. I'm Robert Federici. I cover money and politics here, and I'm your host this week. Our guests are Jessica Hoosman, a reporter here at ProPublica, and Rachel Glickhouse, a journalist with Univision. They are both involved in an innovative new project called Election Land, underway here at ProPublica in partnership with dozens of newsrooms across the country. The goal is to cover voting problems leading up to the election, and then on Election Day, reporting out problems at the polls in real time. Jessica, Rachel, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
So Jessica, first, for those who haven't heard about the project yet, can you tell us a bit about what it is and why it's so unlike anything that's ever been done?
We're trying to cover issues that face voters up to Election Day. We've already started doing this, and then also on Election Day. So it's not so much about the campaign itself. We don't really care who you vote for. We just care that you can. So we're trying to cover issues that affect the ability to vote in real time. So long lines, people being confrontational outside the polling places that might drive voters away, misinformation given out on signs or on voting pamphlets. There are any number of things that we're covering that could affect your ability to vote on the day. And our goal is to cover them at the time that they're happening with the hope that media coverage of them immediately will spark some change the day of. I think in previous elections, media organizations have kind of been able to do a next day autopsy of everything that's gone wrong, but we're hoping to do a more live action stream of coverage of voting issues on the day of elections.
So when you say live action, I mean, technically, how is that going to work?
So we have more than 600 graduate students in journalism, a few undergrads too, but they're kind of stationed all over the country at various graduate schools of journalism. And they're going to be mining social media and a couple of different databases that we have for issues that are facing voters at the polls. And they have been really excellently trained by our partners at First Draft Media to authenticate those tweets, make sure that they're coming from a real person, make sure it's a real problem that is happening that day. And then they're going to be fed up through our chain of very specialized reporters that are packaging these problems and then sending them out to more than 400 local reporters that we have throughout the country. So if we find a problem in Palm Beach, Florida, we can filter that out to a reporter in Palm Beach, Florida. If we find problems in Houston, we can filter that out to our reporters in Houston. And so we're hoping that with these really excellent tools that we have that we're kind of deploying across the country, we can empower local journalists to do better coverage.
Got it. And so, Rachel, at Univision, one of your areas of focus is obviously, you know, Spanish-speaking voters. What sort of problems have we seen so far on that front, if any?
I would say that some of the things we've seen affecting Latino voters in general are a couple of things. One is long lines, which Jessica has also done a lot of reporting on. This is not a problem necessarily unique to this election. Long lines tend to affect minority voters more than white voters. In the 2012 election, on average, Black and Latino voters waited longer than white voters. But we're seeing especially long lines this year, and Latinos are affected by that. Another thing is language access. So for voters who only speak Spanish, there are some places where they simply cannot get assistance understanding the ballot, even though in the Voting Rights Act, there are certain parts of the country where people should be able to get access to Spanish language help. And actually, anywhere in the country, any non-English speaking voter is allowed to bring someone with them into the poll to help them translate and understand the ballot. So that's something I actually spoke to a lawyer today that she mentioned is a problem in Georgia in particular, since they have such a growing Puerto Rican population there, and they're just not getting the language support that they need. And
so when you say that's a problem there specifically, are they barring people from coming into the polls with voters? Or, I mean, what's been the issue?
It's either that they don't have anyone who's bilingual, just there in general, or they don't know the law that they're allowed to do that. So Spanish-speaking voters aren't necessarily getting the help that they need. And I think another thing that Jessica has found that the ProPublica team has done a really good job doing is all these social media rumors. There's just so many that are flying around, and some of them happen to be in Spanish as well as English. And I think that's a big problem that will affect anyone, but it is also affecting Latinos.
Right. So speaking of some of those problems that we've already seen, Jessica, what have you all already caught? You know, obviously people are already voting. What problems, if any, have there been?
Right. So we're already seeing a couple of instances of pretty explicit voter intimidation, even if it doesn't technically violate the law of local counties. So, for example, in West Palm Beach, there were a few dozen Trump supporters standing in front of a key early polling location and shouting at drivers and voters with bullhorns and saying pretty profane things and pretty offensive things to voters, just generally being very aggressive. And so they were outside of the electioneering line that's required by Florida law, and the county that they happened to be in didn't have, for whatever reason, any laws against using amplification. And so they were able to do what they were doing legally, but they were still being very disruptive. So we covered that.
Do other counties have rules against amplification? Or?
Yeah, they do. I mean, this definitely varies by state. Some states ban that outright. But in Florida, state counties get to decide what is legal in front of polling places and what's not. So Broward County bans amplification devices, but Palm Beach County does not. And so the sheriff's office stressed to me several times over the phone, bullhorns are not against the law, where there's nothing we can do about it. And so even though it was incredibly disruptive to the voting process, there really wasn't anything that law enforcement officials could do. But even our coverage of that issue and us putting these videos of Trump supporters saying these crazy things online did encourage the sheriff's department to at least have officers present outside of that polling location, which seems to have calmed things down a little bit. So we're seeing that. I anticipate we will see similar activity on Election Day. But another thing that we're seeing is sort of like overt media attempts by especially right-wing people online to keep Democrats away from the polls and minorities away from the polls. Rachel and I reported on a social media hoax that purported to show a immigration officer making an arrest in a voting line. But after some very cursory research, we found out that that was actually just a superimposed image of a voting line from March in Arizona and some ICE officer arresting someone 2 years ago. And so it was fake. We debunked it. There's similar hoaxes going on across the internet saying, oh, Hillary supporters, did you know that you can text in your vote? Just text Hillary to this number, which you can't do. But they're trying to make it so that Hillary supporters vote by text and they don't actually show up to vote on Election Day. And so these are problems that we're already seeing. We're obviously seeing long lines. And then in suburban Pennsylvania, we had people not receive their absentee ballots really at all. It's unclear if they received them by the time that they needed to turn them in on Friday. We had dozens of people on Twitter complaining about that. So we expect to see these problems up and through Election Day. The election is tomorrow. And so I'm sure we will see even bigger problems then.
Rachel, on the issue of the fake photo of the ICE arrest, did you get any sense from your reporting that that had gone viral in any way, that it had been seen by many people, that it had potentially influenced anyone, or did you guys catch it very early on?
Well, it did circulate pretty widely because one of the reasons was because it was originally tweeted by a very well-known bot that we mentioned in the article that's a Trump bot that has a very large alt-right following. So it did get retweeted a lot, but it's not clear to me how many of those were necessarily, for example, Latino voters and how many of those were people from the alt-right. But we did notice in the replies that there were a lot of people who were like, this is clearly fake. This is clearly Photoshopped. So did it change minds? I don't know. But I think there were a lot of immediate replies if you clicked on the tweet to see people saying that this is fake.
Right, right. So, Jessica, you mentioned the law enforcement presence that showed up outside of the county in Florida, right? So have there been any other instances where the reporting from election land has already had an impact?
Yes, we have seen some pretty notable instances of change already. So, for example, one of our reporters here at ProPublica, who was not yet involved in election land, called the 1-800 number for New York City to request an absentee ballot, and he did not get through. And so we discovered that that was a systematic problem, that this number 12 hours before the deadline for absentee ballot requesting was supposed to come up was down. And so we, along with our partner reporters at WNYC, were able to report that out. That got changed. In Houston, we have sent tons of tips to the Houston Chronicle and the Texas Tribune about issues regarding voter ID laws in Texas. Poll workers in Texas are turning people away from the polls, even though the law in Texas no longer actually requires you to possess a photo ID. And so we've been sending them polling locations where this is happening anyway, and their reporting has sparked some pretty quick change. The Secretary of State in Texas has been super responsive to these issues and has been re-educating poll workers as problems have been found. And then also, Twitter responded pretty quickly when there was a person who had flagged on Twitter these reports that I mentioned earlier about Hillary voters being told that they can text in their vote. So someone flagged this as abusive on Twitter because it's misleading. It's not factual. And then Twitter responded to this Twitter user who we communicated with and told them that that actually wasn't a violation of their guidelines. But once us and BuzzFeed sent in media requests regarding how that possibly was not a violation of their terms to mislead voters in that way, they actually ended up removing the tweet. And so we found several other tweets that similarly violate that same guideline on Twitter, and we're still waiting for a response from those. But, you know, hopefully that will happen.
Got it. And so maybe I'm asking you guys to act like pundits here or media critics, but, you know, you've obviously been monitoring a lot of other media outlets and their work on, you know, voter fraud or voter access. Have you found there to be problems in the way people are reporting on this issue?
Yeah, I'll take that one. You know, I mean, one of the first big posts that we did on Election Land was this weird story on TMZ in which they said that they called three election officials, two in New York, one in California, who were like, voter fraud is a huge concern of ours. We're very concerned about it. And TMZ did this write-up talking about how voter fraud was this huge issue and local officials were really concerned. None of it was true. We called the three people who TMZ purportedly interviewed, and two of them were like, I never said that. Those are not my words. And the facts that they had used around voter fraud were bad. But, you know, I think even major media organizations, even when they write articles about voter fraud and that are good, that the substance of the article is excellent, right? Voter fraud is not an actual problem. It's not going to affect the outcome of this election. Donald Trump's claims of in-person voter fraud are wrong. That's what these articles say. But then they give them headlines like, is the vote rigged? Question mark. We're going to find out. That's like very overly dramatized. Or they give misleading facts. So, you know, there's an article online right now that talks about how their states allow online voting for like military personnel overseas and how easily that can be hacked. But it doesn't really give any context regarding how few people actually do that and how little impact that might actually have on an election. So I think while the vast majority, I think, of media organizations are doing really excellent coverage on these issues, there are some that just don't give it the proper context. And so the problems appear to be a lot bigger than they are. And I think that that kind of just adds to the anxiety that a lot of voters feel around this election anyway.
How about partisans in this debate? The common wisdom is basically that Dems, you know, push for less restrictive voting and that helps them. And Republicans push for tougher anti-fraud voter verification type rules and that helps them. How have you guys seen the two sides and the two candidates talk about these issues and how accurate have they been?
I can talk a little bit about how voter restrictions in particular are seen in the Latino community and how that gets filtered down. So voting restrictions disproportionately affect people of color. There are a couple of reasons for that, but I'll give you a simple one. Early voting allows people to cast their ballot at a time when it is convenient for them. And people of color often work either long hours or don't have childcare, so being able to go on a weekend is really helpful for them, not having to stand in line for 4 hours, for example. So when you cut early voting or you restrict the number of early voting locations, that can have a really big effect on Latinos and communities of color. So I think that Democrats have been really vocal about this in this election because there have been so many new voter restrictions in place. According to the Brennan Center, there are 14 states that have new voter restrictions in place for the first time in a presidential election. There have been a lot of lawsuits. Obviously, Texas is one of them. But I think that This is not a new problem. Voter restrictions have been going on for decades, but this election, because of all of the issues surrounding it and how racism has become such a big part of the campaign, it has really brought this issue to the fore. And I think Democrats are finally giving it more of a spotlight in this debate.
Yeah, you know, I think I'd echo a lot of what Rachel has said. But, I think that as in most political issues, both parties find a way to just slightly twist the facts or exaggerate things to their own benefit. I mean, obviously, the vote being rigged, which Trump repeatedly says is completely inaccurate, has no basis in fact. But the Democrats are also exaggerating things to meet their own needs as well. So, for example, there is a law in Arizona that the Democrats are challenging in court, and a lot of their challenges are perfectly legitimate. A lot of their challenges are a bit of an exaggeration. So what the Democratic Party is playing this law out to say is if you take your neighbor's ballot for them and drop it off, a mail-in ballot, and you drop it off in Arizona, you can be charged with a felony. That is technically true. This law is not being enforced by any poll workers in Arizona, so these impacts are not being borne out. But the reason that this law was passed by the Republican Party of Arizona was because poll workers, Democratic and Republican, were reporting that there were very troubling ballot harvesting practices going on, specifically in Hispanic communities in and around Maricopa County. And so people would knock on a door in a Hispanic neighborhood and they would say, "Who did you vote for this office?" And then they would say, "Well, I'm here to collect your ballot." And then they would give them the ballot. Who knows what these people would do with the ballot once they collected it? So yes, the law is overly punitive. Yes, the law has some issues with application, but the idea behind the law was sound. And so I think that they are as well trying to kind of distort the facts to meet their own interpretation of how voting laws should be written. So I don't think either party is innocent of distorting facts in this election. I think that when we talk specifically about voter fraud, Republicans are certainly more guilty of that than Democrats. But that's not to say that Democrats haven't been twisting things around to meet their own needs as well.
So there's been a lot of concern expressed about problems at the polls come election day. Do you think the average voter is going to be affected? Do you think that these problems have been overblown at all?
You know, Rachel, correct me if I'm wrong, but I really think that the vast majority of voters who show up to the polls on election day are going to have a pretty smooth process. I think they're going to go in, they're going to be able to vote in less than half an hour, and I think they're going to walk right back out. The instances we've seen so far have been pretty isolated, and the majority of people who have early voted so far have not faced a lot of issues. I think poll workers are super prepared to deal with the issues that we're fearing. We've talked to dozens of poll workers so far. They're very prepared to deal with people who might try to be disruptive. And they're also really well trained to do their jobs. And so I think there will be some problems, but I think that the average voter should not be expressly worried that they will face this sort of thing when they get to the polls on Tuesday.
Something that voting rights advocates have repeatedly told me, particularly ones who work with Latinos, is don't discourage people from voting. Yes, there are problems and we should be aware of them, but people should not be afraid to go to the polls and cast their vote. There's obviously a host of problems that do sometimes come up, but like you said, more often than not, you're not going to say, come across an extremely aggressive person trying to block you from walking into the poll place. So I think that is important to keep in mind that, you know, we have seen some incidents of intimidation, but they're really a handful. This is not something that has been a widespread problem in early voting. And the other thing I would say is that Election Protection, which is this national network of lawyers, are doing an incredible job of monitoring what's happening and also getting on top of it right away. So they're the people who are calling law enforcement if they have to, getting in touch with election officials to report problems. So even if there are some problems, there's a lot of people who are working to resolve them quickly too.
So tell me a bit about how Election Day is going to work for election land. A lot of the tips are going to be coming in from social media. How are you guys going to be vetting what's real, what's not? Exactly how does that process work?
As I said, our students are really excellently trained to figure out what's real and what's not real. So if a student finds a tweet that says, I was just harassed in front of a polling station and I'm in Tampa, Florida, and here's a picture of the guy that harassed me. They have been trained to do reverse image searches on those photos to make sure that the photos are real, that the photos were not previously published by somebody else. They are going to be using Google Maps to make sure that the person is where they say that they are and the background of the photo looks like about what that area should look like. They're going to make sure that that person isn't a bot, which is very common on Twitter, as we have already discovered in our reporting so far. They are going to make sure that that person is at the polling location that they say that they're at. They're probably going to correspond with that person to see what happened, to see if the issue was resolved. And then once they do that, they're going to kick it up to some professional reporters that we'll have with us in the CUNY newsroom that are going to be able to further vet those tweets, package them out with some other information that maybe we would get from the folks who are texting into us on Election Day or from the Election Protection Committee that is also giving us their data. And then they're going to be able to send all of those examples of issues in a specific location to reporters. The newsroom at CUNY is really just going to be like a beehive on that day. We're going to have students there, though the majority of the students are elsewhere. All of the people who are going to be vetting the things that the students send to us are going to be at CUNY. And then we're going to have our own national desk at CUNY that's going to be taking up stories of national importance, or if we see any major patterns across the country, we're going to be talking about those. But the great thing about this is that even though we're going to have this huge, busy newsroom on Election Day, the majority of the work is going to be actually taking place outside of the office, right, with these 500-some-odd graduate students who are going to be doing this work for us, and with our 400 local reporting partners who are going to be out there kind of shoe-leather reporting these tips out. So it's really going to be a national effort. I am not aware of any collaborative journalism effort that is this large that has ever happened. So I'm really excited to be a part of it. I mean, you can't really do this before you do it, which is the bad thing about this, right? It's not like we could practice on a presidential election that happened 2 weeks ago. We're just going to kind of show up on Election Day and do it. But we have such smart people in the room with us, right? We've got Google News Labs. We've got Univision. We've got people from the New York Times. We've got election experts that are very respected in their field that are going to be sitting with us in that room, helping us figure out what's real, what's not, what's a persistent problem, what's new, that, you know, I'm pretty confident we can tackle anything that comes up. I don't know. What do you think, Rachel?
I'd add also that we have some of the best verification experts in the world. I've worked with First Draft before, and they're going to be helping with authentication, and especially with the students who are going to be receiving these tips from social media. I've worked with them before on an investigation called Ghost Vote for Medium. That was a crowdsourced effort, also a similar effort using journalists around the world. They really know their stuff. So it's going to be really helpful to have them in the room.
Gosh, they are just like incredibly impressive. They debunked this video. This guy had posted this video on YouTube that he said showed four different Democratic campaigns stuffing ballot boxes. And someone at First Draft found it. And then within 15 minutes, they had found out that all four of those clips were actually filmed in Russia like 4 years ago. And I'm not even sure how they did that. Like, they just like took some screenshots and they were like, no, this is from Russia. And it was so fast. And they debunked this thing. It was like lightning speed. So I'm thrilled to have them in the room. We're going to be able to do some great stuff with the technology that they have.
So I'm sure some of the folks listening will be interested in sort of watching as this plays out. But is there any way that they can get involved themselves? Is there any way they can help as they're, you know, out voting on Tuesday?
Yeah. So there is a number that you can text in if you would like to tell us about your voting experience. And we'll throw that in the description of the podcast because that'll be a little bit easier for you to use. And then you can also tweet us. We're at ElectionLand, which is pretty easy. We will be responsive to your texts and your tweets. And you should tell us how your voting experience is going, even if it's going well. That's good for us to know. And so we're always looking for people to tell us what's going on. Rachel, can you talk about how Spanish speakers can text in?
Yes. We can include the number also below the podcast so you can see it, but we have a WhatsApp number that you can text tips to in Spanish specifically, and also include things like photos and video as well.
Okay. Rachel, Jessica, thanks for being with us.
Thanks. This is fun.
Thank you.
This has been the ProPublica podcast. Thank you for listening.